As Sue mentioned, I work within the western region of the U.S., which includes 8 states and the Pacific Territories, and we're a very large and very diverse region. And what's also important to note is that historically, the western region has received approximately 40% of the total SNAP Ed allocation. And this is important because it does represent we have very large states operating very large programs. And we also have a large diversity of the different types of agencies that do programs. So there is no typical implementing agency in the Western region. We have a mixture of land-grant universities, other universities, public health departments, nonprofits, and food banks. And that's something that really, all that information was very rich as it informed our process that we use. So oftentimes in public health nutrition, we talk about a lot of these grandiose concepts. We're going to make the healthy choice the easy choice. We're going to shape healthier environments. But what does it actually mean? What are we trying to do? So what we created was an evaluation framework that would actually define those concepts and provide specific guidance on how do you measure it. So I have nothing to disclose. And so just so you know, the Food and Nutrition Service, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, I think everyone in here should be, but we are the USDA agency that administers the 15 nutrition assistance programs, including SNAP, formerly food stamps, WIC, National School Lunch Program, and so forth. And we're a very decentralized kind of agency. Our programs and policies and rules are developed through our national office, but then programs are actually implemented and overseen by 7 different regional offices. So as Sue mentioned, every state is required to submit a state plan of operation, which provides the roadmap for how they're going to spend their annual allocation. And as a result of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, the nature of the types of program activities evolved to include a mixture of direct nutrition education, social marketing, and policy systems and environmental change. And ultimately what we're trying to do, the focus hasn't changed, but now we're not only focused on improving dietary outcomes and physical activity, but we're also as well focused on reducing chronic disease, reducing the prevalence of overweight and obesity. So all of our work is guided by the social ecological model, and it's very important, as Sue mentioned, we have 2 different versions of the SEM. Within SNAP-Ed, we use the version that was explained within the Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2010, and this also informed our efforts within the evaluation framework. So states are all required to implement activities at the individual level of the Dietary Guidelines, and they must also focus on activities at either the environmental settings level, which informs making changes in policy systems and environments in the different channels or settings where educational and other types of services are provided, as well as at the sectors of influence level. So that's where we're looking at multiple different large-scale institutions and sectors, agriculture, business, government, healthcare, and media, working collectively to make changes in large-scale jurisdictions, communities, and so forth. And ultimately, we're trying to change societal norms and values, looking at the public's priorities, beliefs, and preferences related to what does it mean to be healthy? What does it mean to make the healthier choice the easy choice? In 2013, right around the time I joined FNS, and that's when actually we first started to implement these changes. So it was the 2013 annual guidance that first fully recognized policy systems and environmental changes. So during that year, a group of us within our region, a group of state agencies and implementing agencies, convened in February to begin a process of developing a series of logic models to create indicators for what are different types of changes that can result at the individual, environmental, sectors of influence, and social, cultural norms and values. So this process initially started in 2013, and it took about 9 months for us to come up with 4 different logic models for each level of the social ecological model, and that resulted in 55 different indicators. Now, 55 indicators is a lot, and that's intentional because of the fact that SNAP-Ed is in many ways a block grant, and states have a lot of flexibility with how they're going to spend their funds. So we wanted to provide a lot of different options, a menu of indicators that states can choose from to measure their program outcomes and effectiveness. Over time, we've made some iterations to the framework representing what states are actually able to measure and what they can't measure, and we're working towards having a full interpretive guide that will be produced later this year. So why are we doing this? So as states started making their transition to policy systems and environmental changes, there wasn't really a system to track the work that they were doing. There wasn't really a way for them to systematically monitor their activities. And also what we've lacked in SNAP-Ed was a common vernacular or a common set of indicators that all different states, regardless if they're a large state, a small state, regardless of implementing agency, can all work towards achieving a common goal. By having this common goal, we can more collectively demonstrate this is what in SNAP-Ed we are able to achieve. So as part of our evaluation framework, we began the process by developing four different evaluation questions. Each question aligned with each of the four levels of the social ecological model. Here we're looking at understanding changes in individual diet, physical activity, and related health outcomes, looking at environmental changes, so in different settings and channels, what are the types of physical activity, nutrition supports, and marketing that are being implemented. Then we looked at sectors of influence, which is relatively new for SNAP-Ed, but really understanding since SNAP-Ed is one type of program within a broader array of program activities within a community, how is SNAP-Ed working with other partners from different sectors to achieve a common goal that no one agency or program could achieve on its own? And lastly, to what extent are community-level activities influencing community-related policies and priorities and values related to what it means to be healthy? To set up the framework, we turn these four different evaluation questions into a specific way to actually measure them. At the individual level, we focus on measuring changes before and after direct nutrition education programs. At the environmental level, rather than focusing on changes in individual characteristics, we're looking at changes in the organizations and channels and sites where people are receiving services. Then as we move towards the sectors of influence, rather than looking at a change one channel or one setting at a time, we're looking at what are the types of changes that occur at the broader city, town, community, territorial, or tribal level. And ultimately, we're looking to see to what extent is everything we've mentioned before having a collective impact on our overall societal changes in norms and values. What's also important to note is that looking at the individual and environmental level, we're more easily able to directly attribute the changes from SNAP-Ed activities to the results that we measure. But as we move towards the sectors of influence and norms and values, we have to focus on ways that SNAP-Ed is contributing to these types of changes, and both attribution and contribution are equally important. So here's the framework as it exists today. So currently we have 51 different indicators that align with the three levels of the social ecological model, as well as our ultimate changes, which are at the societal level. We use a logic model approach to demonstrate changes in the short term, medium term, and long term, and ultimate impacts at all three levels. And taken together, this will help to inform changes in social and cultural norms related to family meals, norms related to breastfeeding, and other norms related to being physically active. Much of our work is done in a sequential approach, so we begin with the short-term outcomes, then we focus on medium-term. A lot of our work at the individual level at medium-term focuses on changes in behaviors before and after nutrition education programs. However, as we get to the long-term outcomes at the individual level, that's where we're focusing on to what extent are low-income audiences meeting the goals set forth in the dietary guidelines in MyPlate or physical activity guidelines. We can't expect that participants are going to achieve all the recommendations from a limited term series program, but we think over time we need an appropriate follow-up in order for specific goals to be achieved. As part of the initial year, what we did, states voluntarily participated in this pilot process. So within the Western region, we had states track the different types of policies, systems, and environmental change activities that they were able to accomplish within a single year. Within a 12-month period, as reported in their annual reports taken together, there were over 900 policy systems and environmental changes that were reported. Now, I want to address that there's a lot of limitation to this amount because what we did initially is we cast the net really wide. So we think, you know, if you think it's a policy system or environmental change, include it. If you think that you're somehow working on this activity, include it in the report. So we went and manually counted all the different PSEs. So this is a very large number. But what we did is we found over time that some of what was being reported wasn't actually a PSE, or some of what was being reported wasn't really meaningful to our evaluation. So since that time, we've been able to use that initial data to make meaningful changes to the work that we're doing. Because 51 indicators is a significant number of indicators, what we did is last year, the seven regional offices, as well as our national office, convened and chose seven priority indicators to focus on that all states would have the potential to measure through their SNAP-Ed programs. So here I'm going to focus on our four different environmental level indicators, again, which focuses on policy systems and environmental activities implemented at the organizational or channel level. Because of the vast number of settings and locations where SNAP-Ed services are delivered, it was very important for us to come up with a systematic way to categorize these different types of activities. So we used popular public health language such as live, learn, work, and play. We also added to that eat and shop, because we didn't think that activities within food retail and restaurant and out-of-home type environments were being appropriately represented in live. So we categorized these six, or we used these six different organizational domains to categorize the different locations and channels where services are provided to make it more meaningful for us to aggregate that data in a significant way. So what I'm going to do now is to walk through some of the priority indicators. So like anything, for many of our states that were new to working on policy systems and environmental changes, we had to begin with an indicator that focuses on organizational readiness. So this is ST4, or short-term 4, which means, or the way we defined it, as identification of opportunities. We define this indicator, the specific measure is the number and percentage of different organizational settings or systems where there was a needs assessment that was conducted and the results of which demonstrate that there is a need for improving access or appeal to nutrition or physical activity supports. Our denominator consists of organizations or settings that were contacted to participate in a needs assessment. And we base this on the model that Sue had mentioned, the REAM model, using the specific types of levels of REAM and so forth. Here we measure, again, organizations or organizational systems such as school districts, parks and recreation, and so forth, where there was a needs assessment conducted, and the results demonstrate there is a need for intervention. This indicator is very important because later on in the framework, when we have a measure of effectiveness, what we do is we actually do a reassessment of the same type of environmental scan or needs assessment, and we measure the changes in the scores from before the intervention to the after. So in the same way in SNAP-Ed, where we've been doing pre and post evaluation for individuals, we're applying that same type of logic to doing pre and post for organizational practice and policy changes. Within each of the six domains that we have, we identified a series of different types of assessment tools or assessment processes that are appropriate. So for instance, within the LEARN domain, which is LEARN constitutes, again, schools, early care and education sites, early Head Start, and so forth, which is approximately more where more than half of SNAP-Ed services take place. We have different types of validated and reliable assessment tools. Here's the WellSat 2.0 that some agencies may be using, as well as the Smarter Lunchroom Self-Assessment Scorecard. Our next priority indicator is ST6, which stands for Short-Term 6, or Partnerships. One of the things that we found during our pilot, where we had over 900 PSEs reported, is that many of our agencies wanted to, quote-unquote, check the box for having a partnership. They wanted to be able to count every single meeting that they were attending or any agency that they were working with to get credit for that. And we found that that really was too cumbersome to track, and it wasn't really meaningful. So here we define partnerships as meaning the number of organizational partnerships, councils, or collaboratives that organize themselves around a common agenda. They have a shared vision, agree to develop a specific plan, and then actually commit to coordinating activities, sharing metrics, and maintaining continuous communication using many of the principles of collective impact that Sue has described. We can measure partnerships either through a qualitative approach, where we can do key informant interviews, review different types of documents, such as meeting minutes, to actually identify the strength of the partnership, or we can use a quantitative approach, such as the free online assessment tool, the Wilder Inventory, which is a tool for measuring the strength of a coalition or a partnership. Now we move into the actual process of beginning to adopt a change, either a nutrition support or a physical activity support. MT4 is our nutrition supports, and MT5 is our physical activity supports. And for the purposes of today, I'm just going to focus on MT4. So when we know that agencies begin the systematic process of engaging in PSEs, beginning with identifying opportunities, becoming ready, and then working to develop strong partnerships, that's when agencies are ready to engage in adopting specific changes. The way we define nutrition supports adoption is we look at the number and total proportion or percentage of settings that have already had their needs assessed, where there's at least one change that's made in writing or practice that will help to improve access or shape appeal for, in this case, healthy eating. We also track different types of environmental changes. Again, these can include the built environment, normative, communications, or social environment. We look specifically at procurement changes, as well as food preparation changes. At the same time that we measure adoption, we also measure reach. And we look at reach from two different perspectives. We look at the total reach, so the total number of individuals who potentially benefited from that change, and we use a definition that was developed by Alan Cheadle. Then we also look at our SNAP-Ed reach. So if we know that there's a larger school or a larger organization, we want to ensure that more than half of the people reached by that particular policy change were in fact SNAP-Ed eligible. Because if that's not the case, then we're not delivering our effective programs and services. So here are the different types of environmental changes that we measure, ranging from marketing changes, changes in the layout and display of food, lactation supports or policies for working mothers, rules on foods that are served in meetings or in classrooms. We also focus on procurement changes, not only at schools, but also at childcare settings, at other senior congregate or senior nutrition centers, as well as food preparation changes. In terms of measuring adoption, again, we can largely focus on qualitative approaches to measuring adoption, taking the form of key informant interviews, direct observation, using photographic assessment tools, and we also measure reach. And here's one particular example. So within a setting where we actually have enrollment records, we know how many children are attending a school, we can look at if there was a school wellness policy that was adopted, and that school has 500 children, we can assume that the 500 children are typically exposed to that school wellness policy and are assumed to benefit from it. So we say our total reach is 500. But if we know that 80% of those students are eligible for free or reduced price meals, we can then say that 400 of those 500 students are part of our SNAP-Ed reach. Then at the census tract level, so if we're in a place you don't have a brick and mortar location, we do have doing work at a community-based locale, here we use census tract level data to do an estimate. So let's say that there was a policy change or environmental change which was opening up a new community food garden as a side to a church or other food pantry. Here we look at information from the census tract. So if we look at and we find that 120 community members were directly exposed or participate in the community garden and are assumed to likely benefit from it, we may not be able to ask all of them. It's fairly intrusive to find out, well, are you in fact SNAP-Ed eligible? So instead what we do is we use census tract data. If we know that 70% of people within that census tract are within 185% of federal poverty level, we apply that same proportion to the work that they're doing at the community garden. Again, to have a total reach and a SNAP-Ed reach. So in terms of where we are today, and what we've learned over this process over the last two and a half years is that we do know that it is possible to have a common set of indicators for SNAP-Ed, which is a very valuable lesson in itself. We also learned that using indicators, because this is voluntary, evaluation in SNAP-Ed is a voluntary part of the program. We know that we have to get buy-in at many different levels, and that buy-in begins with state agencies, because state agencies are responsible for overseeing the administration of the program. So it was so essential as part of our work that we had state agencies at the table providing their input. We also learned that states interpret measures very differently, and which is why we're developing the interpretive guide to provide that greater clarity and guidance. We also learned that even though states do want to have a lot of flexibility because there is a perception that no two states are the same, we do want to have some degree of consistency. So though while we can't require the use of specific instruments, we can identify preferred or priority instruments that states can use. We've also learned that not everything can be measured. And that's an important thing to recognize. Nor do we want to measure everything. We only want to measure what's really going to answer our questions. At the same time, we've learned what gets measured gets done. So when we're measuring PSEs, states are going to focus on PSEs. We also recognize there's a tension between attribution and contribution. Many of our agencies do want to have credit for the work that they're doing, and sometimes getting credit means being part of a successful partnership. and taken together, you can collectively achieve a goal. And lastly, we recognize that there's a real difference between academic evaluation and real world or snap-it evaluation. While we try to be as rigorous as possible, sometimes what we have to focus on is making sure that we can get the appropriate follow-up. We're working with very low income, very low literacy populations. We don't have the capacity to randomize trials. So what's most important is that we're being consistent. So as I conclude this, we're in the process right now of developing our interpretive or implementation guide to the evaluation framework, and we have more than 20 states that are participating in this process in partnership with ASNA and the National Collaborative of Childhood Obesity Research. We wanted to have national representation. And for those of you in the audience today, if any of you are interested in being a reviewer of the implementation guide, I'd be happy to participate you to be in that process. And we're working towards a meeting in the first week of December as well to convene different SNAP-Ed and outside experts to focus on informing the work that we're doing. And here are some resources, including the Western Region Framework, our priority indicators, and also we're working closely with the UNC Chapel Hill, who has also developed its own series of evaluating PSEs. We really want to make sure that those efforts are aligning and building upon one another. So thank you very much.